This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. MIBiz recently examined the state of the craft beverage industry in West Michigan. Coming up, staff writer Nick Manis joins us to discuss where things stand and the challenges that craft brewers and potential new brewers face. But first,
five people were killed in Kalamazoo Tuesday night doing something seemingly ordinary and even healthy. A group of bicycle riders were struck by a pickup truck near Mark and Glenn Park around 6:30. In addition to the five people killed, another four bicyclists were injured in the crash. We're going to get some reaction from the bicycle riding community in the Kalamazoo area. Renee Mitchell is the president, and John Olbrot is the vice president of the Kalamazoo Bicycle Club. Thank you both for being here on a tough day.
Oh, thanks for having us.
Thank you, Gordon.
And I want to note before we begin, we are speaking on Wednesday afternoon, so there may be some details that don't come up in our conversation. People may wonder why. That's because we're recording Wednesday, and there could be additional news by the time they actually hear the interview. Let's begin by having you tell people a little bit about your organization. What is the Kalamazoo Bicycle Club?
The Kalamazoo Bicycle Club has been around since the 1970s, and our focus is for advocacy, education, and to promote bicycling in our area. We get together and do group rides on a weekly basis during the riding months of the year, and we do advocacy in our area. We have some members that are really strong in that, and we appreciate their efforts, and we also have educational opportunities for the community.
The riding months of the year would be?
March through October. Correct me if I'm wrong, Don.
That would be correct. Yeah. And, of course, there is a contingent of more hardcore riders that will do it whenever.
Yep, in the wintertime there are. They got the fat tire bikes out these days.
So if you could tell me what you thought when you heard about the events of Tuesday night when there was this horrible accident involving a pickup truck and then this group of nine bicycle riders.
It was heartbreaking, just not knowing who the group was for a very long time. And it just, the visual of what was explained was just heart-wrenching.
You start hearing this, it's very sketchy. I was first made aware of it via a text from someone. And it's, denial. It's, I want to say, no, this didn't happen as long as I can until, the evidence becomes irrefutable. And then it's, the reality of it starts to sink in a little bit, and it's incredible.
Our hearts and thoughts and prayers go out to the families and friends of those involved.
Is it common for there to be a group like this? It was nine people riding bikes together mm-hmm. along this one path. Is that a fairly common thing throughout Kalamazoo that people kind of get together a certain set time of the week and do this together?
Yes. Yeah. The Kalamazoo Bicycle Club has a number of group rides that go out during the week. This was not a part of one of our regular scheduled club rides, but there are other groups in the area that do get together and go out on group rides.
Is this a place, that spot along West Edge Avenue near the Nature Center and Mark and Glenn Park, that people, as far as you know, kind of like to ride bikes? Is it a popular place?
I believe it is.
Yeah, I would say it is. It's a good stretch of road. It's been resurfaced a couple of times in the last few years. It has a nice roll to it, which for the more enthusiasts of the cycling community is a nice little challenge. Visibility is good. The road is wide. There is a shoulder there, and it's a nice place to ride. And it's one of the few places getting north out of Kalamazoo. So it tends to get used quite a bit.
So is there anything that you would want people who normally do ride bikes, whether they're in a group or maybe just on their own, perhaps they use it to get to the store or something that you would want them to hear this news and think about in terms of their own safety out there?
As far as this incident, I don't know. I have nothing to say relative to how you could prevent this. I have nothing to say relative to that. But in a general sense, there are some basic rules that anybody who gets on a bicycle should follow. And one of them is be visible. You want people to be able to see you. You want to be predictable. If you're riding down the road or the sidewalk or the bicycle path and there are other people there, if they're seeing you, they need to know what you're going to do next. So no surprises.
And there's also additional things you can do by putting lights on your bikes, making sure they're very visible from the rear and the front. And you know, you always want to make sure you wear a helmet, but even using mirrors to see those cars coming up from behind you can also be helpful. And just to be aware of your surroundings at all times. When you're out there cycling, you're very vulnerable to those motorists, and it's important just to be aware of everything that's going on around you. And sometimes when you're in a group of people, you get chatting and you can, you know, kind of be deterred from those things around you, but it's important to stay focused.
And based on what we know, again, speaking Wednesday afternoon, it seems that the people riding in this group had taken the sort of precautions mm-hmm. that John spelled out there of, you know, they were visible, they were not weaving all over the road. It seems that they were the wrong place, wrong time.
Right.
I would agree. And, you know, a couple of other quick things is, you know, keep your bike in good mechanical condition. You know, you only got two wheels. You don't want one falling off. And another thing is, whenever, if you are ever in a situation that you are not comfortable in, whether that's because of traffic, because of the road conditions, because of the weather, because of other riders, feel, you know, do not defer from stopping what you're doing and leaving. You know, you don't have to go on. You know, you can walk away if you have to. But if you have a feeling that this is a dangerous situation and you're not comfortable in it, leave.
Obviously, you know, the person who was driving this car, by all reports, was driving very erratically. So far, we haven't, as of this afternoon, received confirmation as to whether or not he was actually under the influence of alcohol, which is widely speculated upon. But let's kind of remove that for the moment here when we're talking about the issue of bicycle safety. When someone in a car, assuming that they are paying attention and that they are following the rules of the road themselves, they come upon someone who is riding a bike, what should that person in the car be doing?
Well, definitely slowing down, first of all. You know, they should slow down, and they too should check their surroundings and then make sure that it's safe to pass the bicyclists at a minimum of 3 feet, hopefully more. And then, you know, making sure when there's room to go back in ahead of the cyclist. But for the most part, slowing down and then passing, going across into the other lane and passing.
Is that done often enough? I mean, when people are out there riding, do they have reason to be concerned about their safety on any given day in Kalamazoo or anywhere else for that matter?
Yes. Yeah. Cars do not abide by that. Now, there are some that do. There are some that will slow down and they'll wait. You know, if cyclists are going up a hill, I've had many cars just wait behind me as I'm pedaling up the hill. And when I get to the top and get over and they do get a safe passing area and pass me, I always give a wave and a smile and thank them. And I think that's important for cyclists to always remember that when those motorists out there are being considerate, that we need to make sure we show our appreciation to them.
Are the roads and streets in Kalamazoo, for the most part, bicycle friendly?
The roads and streets in Kalamazoo, has a wealth of good cycling. Could it be better? Yes. You know, there are some roads that do need to be avoided just because of the condition. But for the most part, it's a very good cycling community. Within Kalamazoo, no matter where you live, you're a pretty short ride from really being out in the country. And on country roads, in low traffic conditions, which is really kind of a special thing to be able to say. So, I mean, are there issues with road conditions and, you know, repairs and, you know, other things that could lend itself to cycling? Certainly, there's a lot that could be done. But as it stands right now, there's an awful lot out there that's very good to ride on.
Could it be made more so? I mean, you mentioned some things, but, I mean, if there were sort of a list of improvements that someone called up, you know, the Kalamazoo Bicycle Club and said, hey, what can we do? What would be the suggestions that you might make?
Well, I think you want to be conscious of the width of the roadway. If you, as you're designing the motorway, the entire motorway, just not just the road surface, you know, keep in mind not only bicycles but pedestrians and any other users for that space. Make sure there's enough room. Make sure that it's marked appropriately.
And also filling potholes that come up in the roads, as well as rough roads that get really rough. A lot of times that cause cyclists to kind of move into the lane and black motorists a little bit more because they're trying to avoid those bumps because those can be damaging to their bikes and tires and cause crashes to bicyclists.
John, you mentioned a little while ago the idea that kind of low traffic, more wide open areas are, you know, that most people in Kalamazoo are not too far from that. Is that what you would describe as sort of the ideal place to ride a bike, somewhere where you know you probably won't get a lot of traffic? Of course, there's never any guarantee. And someplace with a, you know, a wide road, a fair amount of space to maneuver?
Yeah, that would be ideal. To have room for all vehicles. Yeah, most motorists, I think, do give pretty good leeway to cyclists on the road. But sometimes the road itself can make that a little difficult. So if there, again, when the roads are being designed, and I understand you can't always do that because of right-of-ways and other legal issues, but where it's possible, if they could spread that lane out and keep in mind that, you know, others will be using it besides just cars, I think that would be very helpful.
Is there sort of a sense of loss amongst people who are bicycle enthusiasts when something like this happens? When somebody is lost while they're in the act of riding a bicycle, is there a sense of loss that comes with that?
Definitely.
Absolutely.
You can, because it could happen to anybody. And, you know, we've heard just a lot of, you know, chatter back and forth, emails and comments on Facebook and stuff, just everyone is heartbroken. And we've gotten so many responses from people across the country, and they're just feeling for Kalamazoo. You know, when it's the second news story on a national TV show, you know it's big. When I saw that this morning, it just hit me. So it affects everybody.
It's a community of like-minded individuals that go out there doing something they enjoy. And people from all different walks of life, different backgrounds, but they get on a bicycle and they ride together and they enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. And so there is a community, whether the people, you know each other or not. And when that community, something like this happens, it affects all of us and it affects us deeply, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Cycling is a passion. You know, and when you get it, you get it. And it's a passion that, you know, these groups that bike together share. It's touches us all.
Is there some hope maybe amongst people in a group like yours that when there is a tragedy like this, that maybe it gets us talking a little more about the issues surrounding it? You know, obviously bicycle safety, how drivers treat bicyclists, and maybe even a little bit beyond that, you know, the issues of perhaps distracted driving or driving under the influence, if that turns out to be a factor in this. Is that kind of the hope that this does generate a little more conversation about those issues?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that we have to look for, we have to hope. And it's a tragedy of this magnitude and this nature. I mean, we have to hope that some good comes out of it. And if the good that comes out of this is to help ensure that this doesn't happen to someone else, I mean, that's all we can hope for.
It's always a wake-up call, too, to some of us that, you know, could take being on those roads and groups for granted, you know, that it could happen, and it could happen to anyone.
There was recently a ride of silence to honor people who had been killed in bike accidents. You know, does that sort of thing, is it relatively common, or is it still, you know, the you know, even one person riding by themselves, you know, in you know, particular circumstances, is it still a very unusual event when someone is killed on the road riding a bicycle?
I think it's pretty unusual. As you're saying that, I'm trying to think. I mean, I know there was an instance where a rider passed away on a ride within the last few years, but that was a medical condition. So that's that. In this community, I don't remember another cyclist.
I mean, it does happen, but not to the magnitude of this incident. You know, when you have a group of nine, when all of them were down, got down, you know, ran over on their bikes, and then five killed. I mean, that's, I think in the nation, that's not something that happens.
I think because of our affiliation with the club, we see a lot of, you know, news stories that maybe don't get a lot of play in the mainstream just because of our affiliation with cycling and the bike club. So we see it, and it's not uncommon to have this happen, but not to this magnitude.
Renee, you noted a while ago that people who are into cycling are really into it.
Mm-hmm.
Does something like this change that at all, do you think, for anybody out there? Or, are the people who are committed to cycling just as committed to it today as they were yesterday?
I believe they'll be just as committed. And it may, it will break their hearts. But you got to get back up, in time. They'll be back on their bikes. And good will come, if it's more awareness.
Would you like to see something in particular done amongst the bike riding community for these people? I know that there's something planned for Wednesday night. Would you like to see maybe something more ongoing for the victims of this?
Yes. Yep. What that entails, I don't know as of yet, but it's something that we are looking into.
Renee Mitchell and John Olbratt, thank you very much for your time.
Oh, thanks for letting us be here, Gordon.
Renee Mitchell is the president and John Olbratt the vice president of the Kalamazoo Bicycle Club. I spoke with Renee Mitchell and John Olbratt yesterday afternoon. The names of the five bicyclists killed in Tuesday's crash have since been released. 53-year-old Deborah Ann Bradley, 42-year-old Melissa Ann Fevig Hughes, and 56-year-old Suzanne Jones Sipple, all of Augusta, along with 73-year-old Tony Nelson and 74-year-old Larry Pollock, both of Kalamazoo, were killed on Tuesday. Four other people were injured and they remain hospitalized. Three of them are listed in serious condition and one in fair condition. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans. By now, it's well known that craft beer is big business, especially in this particular part of the country. MIBiz has examined the state of craft brewing in West Michigan, including some of the challenges and expected changes in the market, for a series of stories. Nick Manis is a staff writer for MIBiz. Thank you again for being with us.
Thanks as always, Gordon. I appreciate it.
So if we were talking right now about the state of the craft beer industry, sort of like, the State of the Union address, would we say it is strong?
I think you could definitely say it's strong. I think the going number right now nationwide is something like two craft breweries opening every day. And that doesn't appear to be stopping right now. The Brewers Association, the National Trade Association, says that I believe there's more breweries in planning right now, just based on federal regulatory filings, than there were total breweries around just a few years ago.
And if we look around here in this part of Michigan, of course, Kalamazoo has Bell's and a number of other brewers which have opened their doors in recent years. Grand Rapids has a pretty strong craft brew footprint. Is it fair to say that this part of Michigan and maybe this part of the country is a little further ahead of the rest? Is that the sense you get when you talk to some of the people who look at this nationally?
Further ahead, quite possibly. I know Michigan is, right up there. I don't call the exact number off the top of my head, but, we're somewhere between top 5 and 10 in the country for total number of breweries. Of course, states like Colorado and California and Oregon kind of have the premier sense of craft beer, but Michigan is definitely up there and continues to gain. Founders and Bell's both are heavy hitters in that industry. Interestingly enough, Founders is no longer considered a craft brewery by the Brewers Association just because of a recent partial sale of the company to an outside firm.
So I'm sorry, that's an interesting point you just brought up there. So is there a certain sort of way of distinguishing what is a craft brewer from what is not a craft brewer? Are there certain sort of guidelines they look at when they're deciding who fits that bill and who doesn't?
Yeah, the Brewers Association, Colorado-based trade group, has, you know, a very specific set of guidelines for what is a craft brewer. And the reason that they do that is that they say, you know, they want to know exactly who they're going to bat for. So a company like Founders, for instance, last year when they sold a 30% stake in their company to a Spanish firm, the Brewers Association limit for outside ownership is 25%, I believe. So that made Founders, I think they call them, an associate member, and there's a handful of other breweries that have kind of gone that route as well. I mean, some in California and Oregon, and I believe out of Chicago, you know, they no longer fit that exact description.
So if someone right now thinks that they have the next great thing in terms of craft brewing, what does the market look like for them right now to get into that business?
You know, I think kind of the main trend that we're seeing is that the pace of growth is slowing. I think, you know, a lot of people that we've talked to, I mean, I should say, you know, me and my colleagues and I all worked pretty hard on these stories. But kind of the one trend that came out is it's going to be hard to be the next Founders or Bell's or Deschutes or whichever, you know, big brewer you choose to look at now. The marketplace is definitely becoming more saturated. I don't want to say in any way that it is saturated. I think there's more room for growth, but it's going to be hard to make your presence as one of those massive brewers now if you're just starting.
Is it sort of like trying to be the next Apple or the next Microsoft? Mm-hmm. That, you know, these are, it's an established industry now and there are established players in it, whereas when Bell's was getting started, it wasn't quite that way.
Sure, I think that's definitely fair. And I mean, you know, it should be known that, you know, Bell's started more than a decade before Founders. So, you know, now they're, you know, roughly at the same place, you know, give or take a little bit. But Bell's had a 10-year head start, and we're definitely well ahead of that curve.
There's an interesting quote from one of your stories that I want to bring up here. Given the industry's growth trajectory, it's attracted a handful of people who are getting into the business to make money rather than to make quality beer. And that's starting to show, according to Dave Ringler, who founded Cedar Springs Brewing Company. I'm wondering if that says something about the way that the brewers and the people who've started these businesses view this business and the way they operate, that there's something to be done here besides make money.
Sure. I mean, I think for years, at least the cliche was that, you know, brewing is all about the passion. It's always been known as kind of this, you know, industry with a lot of camaraderie. You know, they don't view other breweries as competition. I think, you know, as the industry grows and as it matures, that's maybe, you know, changing to some extent. I don't think, you know, that's to say that, you know, every brewery out there views the brewery down the street as direct competition. And I think there's plenty of examples of where that camaraderie still exists. But I do think that the maturing of the industry will also bring about some of that sea change.
But is there still a fair amount of, you know, maybe not exact collaboration, but opportunities where two brewers do recognize that they can sort of complement each other rather than go head-to-head in all-out competition?
Absolutely, I think so. And I think, you know, the other big thing that's happening is, you know, increasingly there's the view of local is getting smaller. You know, a number of people that we talked to said, you know, local has gotten down to just 5 or 10 miles. Founders, you know, might be a local brewery to me here in Grand Rapids, but, you know, to somebody in Cedar Springs, they now have their local brewery right there. I think, you know, that creates more opportunity for somebody to get in just because that idea of local beer is getting so much smaller.
So are the established brewers looking to do anything different? Or are they looking to expand in some way? Are they also exploring some other possibilities for business ventures?
Sure. I think there's kind of one thing that we wrote about is there's kind of a push, a little bit of pressure on many of the established brewers now, kind of from above and below. If some of them seek to expand, they need to look to different ways to do that. It might be, you know, private equity dollars, or, you know, in the case of founders, you know, selling a portion of your company to, you know, an outside firm. And then at the same time, you know, because of this push for local and more small breweries just, you know, popping up in neighborhoods or in outlying cities that have never had a craft brewery, you know, all of a sudden there's some a sense of new competition. So it's, like I said, it's kind of a little bit of pressure from both sides, I think, for some of the established players.
And you actually talked to Bell's about this, and they said that one of the things that they're trying to do a little bit more of is rotate in new products rather than just kind of relying on the beers which have established their business and that they've been able to rely on for sales. Is it becoming the case that if you're going to continue to do well as a brewer, you need to be finding new beers that you can introduce to customers?
I think that's definitely true. I think, you know, every brewer realizes that they kind of have to have an IPA of some sort, but, you know, Bell's can't rely on the Two-Hearted will forever be their stalwart that can continue to help them grow. So they need to find new ways to, you know, keep consumers, you know, interested in what their beer is and come up with all kinds of new ways to keep those consumers happy.
And there's also an article on the MI Biz site about finding some of the new flavors and some of the new things that brewers are looking for. So what are some of those things that they are trying to develop that can give us a different beer, if you will?
Sure. I think fruit is certainly the big one. You know, I've got that story pulled up right now, and we've got a picture of Perrin's Grapefruit IPA on. That's become a pretty big seller for Perrin, from what I understand. So brewers are increasingly looking at, you know, grapefruit-infused IPAs. I know Deschutes has a big one with orange, orange flavoring in it. So, you know, increasingly that's just another way to differentiate yourself, is by having whatever, you know, might be seen as the newest and greatest flavor.
Do any of the brewers that you have talked to for these stories, Nick, express any concern, maybe not as much for themselves, but for someone else trying to get into this business, that we are nearing some sort of saturation point for craft beer?
You know, I think that's always a concern. Based on people that we've talked to, certainly I think, you know, understand that there might be a day when that's the case, but nobody seems to think that we're there right now. You know, like I said earlier, breweries continue to open. There's, you know, a couple thousand breweries just in planning right now around the country. And so I think, you know, kind of the general consensus is that as long as these breweries continue to differentiate themselves, and as long as there is that push towards a local beer, that there is room for continued growth. It just won't be at that same kind of breakneck pace that we've seen in over the last 5 to 10 years, perhaps.
Do people sort of view it as the case that there's always room for one more good brewer? Maybe not room necessarily for just one more brewer, but one more good brewer, someone who's got a good beer and maybe something a little different to offer the customer.
Sure. I think that's another thing that a couple of brewers brought up is, as long as there's a push towards quality, and, you know, not every brewer out there is considered, you know, a quality brewer, that as long as you're producing quality, there will be, you know, continued room for growth.
Nick, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Gordon. I appreciate it as always.
Nick Manis is a staff writer for MI Biz. You can find their stories on the state of the craft beverage industry at mibiz.com. There's also a link available through our website, wmuk.org. This is WMUK's West Southwest. I'm Gordon Evans.